You're listening to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast, a product of the Oregon Basketball Coaches Association. To learn more, visit our website at or.nhsbca.org. Welcome to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. I'm Derek Duman, OBCA Vice President and Boys Basketball Coach at West Albany High School. Today, I'm joined by the legendary coach Barry Adams, who retired from South Salem High School. Coach, how are you doing today?
Good. Everything's going well.
Great. Glad to hear it and super excited to have you on today, Coach. I want to start by asking you, for people that maybe aren't familiar with you or your story, can you give us some background on your career, kind of how you got into coaching, and tell us about your career coaching high school hoops in Oregon?
Well, first of all, I was one of those odd people that by the time I came out of high school, I decided on my own to go to Oregon College of Education, which was a place to become a teacher because I had decided by the time I graduated from high school that I wanted to teach and coach kids. And so I went directly there, spent 5 years there to get a degree, spent 40 years in the basketball business at the high school level, 1959 to 1998, and won about 650 games during that time period. A couple of state championships, a couple second place finishes, I think 3 third place finishes, something like that. A couple of fourths, and so on. And I went to Nestucca High School to start with, had a nice 8 years down there, went to Lebanon then, 1967 to 1972, then went to Hillsboro High School from 72 to 85, and then to Glencoe to 84, I mean, and then went to Glencoe when they built the new high school in Hillsboro until 87, and went from there to South Salem and finished in, again, 98 or 99.
That's awesome. Coach, can you talk about, you know, being all over the state of Oregon, really, and coaching in some different areas? Can you talk about that a little bit? What was that like to, you know, start in Nestucca and then Lebanon and so on and so forth?
Well, and there were 180 students at Lebanon or at Nestucca. There were 2,400 students at Hillsboro High School when I went there. So went on to all different size schools. They all had they all did their things well. You know, they just handled kids well. It was back during a time period when things went fairly well. And, you know, all five high schools did things differently. But they did a good job back in that day and age of taking care of kids and handling kids and so on. And so I thoroughly enjoyed my 40 years in the business. I wouldn't, as I look back at it, I wouldn't do anything else.
That's great. Something I think that we can all relate to is looking back and hoping that everything goes well and we have no regrets. Coach, can you talk about, you know, one of the things that your teams were known for, wherever you were, was being up-tempo and playing quick and getting after it. Can you talk about how you created that mentality within your team? And what your thoughts behind that style of play were?
Yeah, well, one of the first things kids need to understand, and I think education does them a real service in the fact that you expect certain things out of them. You know, and I always found kids were pretty doggone good about it. They weren't always, and sometimes you got into difficulty over it. But if we said, you know, if we told our kids we wanted to run, doggone, they better be ready to run. You know, I don't know how many times during the 40 years in the business I turned to a youngster and said, you know, to a kid and say, well, you know, the reason you're not playing any more than you're playing is because you can't get up the floor. You know, and at least at that point you gave him an option. And because I'll tell you what, something with a running game people may not always understand is that everybody says they want to be a runner. But I'll tell you what, if you're running that floor 40 times a ball game and you receive one pass up the floor in that 40 trips, it doesn't take you long to figure out how you get to cut the throttle and save some energy. And so, you know, your kids have got to, they've got to do what you ask them to do, and you've got to find a way to get them to do it. And I always found kids pretty reasonable that way. I mean, they all wanted to play more. They all wanted to get more shots up. But all coaches put up with that in all circumstances. So, you know, we wanted to run, and boy, I tell you what, we had some great running ball games with West Albany, and back in the good old day when, you know, Coach, I don't know what they averaged, but it had to be close to 100 a ball game back in the good old days with Coach Roberts and so on and so forth. Matter of fact, we scored 118 one night against West, and I think it was at West. Maybe it was at home, but I think it was at West when I was at South. And I think one at 118 to maybe 111. And those were some amazing scores. And I'll tell you what, we had to play very well to get a win. And there were some really good ball clubs there. Fun basketball for kids to play. Kind of fun to coach. Aggravating like all sports are and like all activities are. I mean, you didn't always have good nights. You didn't always play well. You still had to come back the next week.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned, you know, playing up-tempo can be fun, you know, to coach and to play. I guess my question is, that's to do with, like, the defensive side of it. You know, I think, obviously, anytime after you win a game, you're excited. But how do you, you know, deal with giving up 111 points maybe in a game? How do you kind of be okay with that as a coach and explain to players it's okay to give up over 100 points?
Well, you can't do that very often. But, you know, if you're going to run with them, scores are going to be higher. And, we always kept track of a number of things statistically that were very important to us. Well, in fact, one of my coaches on the bench always ran our offensive efficiency rating system, OER. And it was something I got from a coach back east and really liked. And what you did is you kept track of all your possessions in a ball game. You also kept track of the other team. And if you scored 118 points on 87 possessions, it was a pretty good night. You played very well. Now, if you scored 118 points on 110 possessions, you didn't play nearly as well. In other words, how effective were you with things? And it depended an awful lot. The other things, I remember playing North Salem one night when I was at South Salem, or no, when I was at Lebanon. And it was 25-25 at half. And I remember walking down the stairs looking at the OER chart. And we've played well the first half. And here we have 25 points at halftime, which is, and, you know, and we, back then we weren't scoring, we might have been scoring 65 a ball game or so. But we didn't have a lot of points, but we had scored 25 points in 23 possessions. We scored over 1 point per possession, which was really pretty good. Anytime you could get to one and above, your offense was performing very well. And so, again, there were things like that. And we could always, that was part of selling it to kids, because it wasn't just you saying our offense wasn't very good tonight. Gentlemen, we had a .83 OER. We were crappy. And, I mean, they didn't need any more information. You didn't have to tell them they were crappy after you heard that they, you know, had only got averaged 0.83 possession points per possession.
Yeah, and you mentioned you kept that for the other team as well, right? So what was kind of your goal defensively? You know, what were you trying to hold other teams to?
If we tried to keep it about a 0.80. And I'll tell you what, you don't lose many ball games with a .80. You lose one once in a while. You know, it's like I say, I mean, you may have a 34-31 ball game at halftime. Sounds like you're moving along fairly well. But if you had 34 points and had 47 possessions, your offense stunk. It was bad. You had about a .7. Is what you had, and you can't win many ball games with a .7.
So then your goal offensively, was it to be greater than one and hold them to less than 0.8? Was that kind of what your goal
that
was?
That was about correct. You picked up on that pretty close. You must be a basketball coach.
That's right. And serve as a math teacher also. So you're speaking,
I see. Okay,
you're speaking my language.
Well, I was always good at math, but I was a social studies teacher.
Good stuff. Coach, I want to talk to you about the triangle offense. I know that you're a big fan of the triangle and have been advocating for that for a while. Can you talk about what it is you like about the triangle offense so much?
Sure. Sure. It's the same thing we've been talking about so far. It all fits mm-hmm. together, and here's how it does it. If, you know, we took the ball inside, I mean, is there a great place for the three-point shot in basketball? Absolutely. Love it. But I'll tell you what, you better shoot it fairly well or you don't want to shoot too many of them. Same thing down inside. Again, talking about how many points we scored and how many possessions. In order for us to, you know, if all we get is about an 80% shooting statistic in a ball game, our offense probably didn't score a lot of points per possession. Chances were we didn't win nearly as often. And to take the ball down inside and start at 7 feet from the basket with the rim is not, it's a pretty good place to shoot. Well, matter of fact, I would tell kids generally, you ought to be able to shoot 60 from there, maybe 65. Well, we don't lead too many guys shooting 60 or 65 before, you know what? We're going to win quite a few ball games. And here again, it was always easy for us. We could take, in practice, we might chart some stuff, and we did often. And we'd chart something with those post kids, how many times they got the ball down in a certain area and so on and so forth, and what were they in that area. And once again, it was pretty easy to convince them that if we can penetrate inside to 7 feet with that ball, you are down on the block, you catch it, chin it, look across the floor, look back to where the ball came from, nobody coming after you, it's one-on-one. Now you can get a 7-foot jump hook, anything to a lay-in. And there's nothing, it's what helps win. We won a state championship at South Salem with Thalo Green and Mike mm-hmm. McShane playing. Thalo, we shot 5'11 from the field for the season. Thalo shot 6'39 and averaged 20 points a ball game. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we won probably 6 or 7 ball games that year. But, I mean, the last 2 times down the floor, Thalo had the ball. And he had it down in that block area because he was pretty salty with it. So you don't have to, you can be tough, just as tough shooting the three. You got the really good 3-point shooters, that's how you win ball games. But then you can set them up and get them in a position where they're going to get the good looks. And a good look is not often a look in which you've got a guy running at you that almost blocks your shot and kind of affects you and so on and so forth. You need to be able to run offense that develops that good 3-point shot. You know, and are there ways you can do it? Well, sure, there's a number of ways. And by the way, let me go back very quickly to give you a little different side of things. I went to OCE, played college basketball there, played football, basketball, and baseball there. But came out and I played for Bob Livingston, who was a good guy, didn't have a lot of basketball knowledge. So my first coaching job's down in Estaca, and I go down my first year, and I coach football in the fall. And I remember the last Thursday of practice, my first year there, the last Thursday of practice, I'm walking down the stairs off the football field, which is up above the school. I'm walking down the stairs, and it all of a sudden dawns on me, basketball starts next Tuesday. Because we're getting ready to play our last football game. And all of a sudden it hits me, what in the world are we going to run? Because at OCE under Dr. Livingston, we didn't have an offense. And we just ran a series of little things here and there that there was a screen set someplace and you could use it if you wanted to try to, whatever. And so what I had to do is I had to sit down. I mean, I didn't have the advantage of playing somebody that ran some form of a five-man passing game, something like that. Then you could take it on with you and teach it. You could teach it to your kids. Matter of fact, isn't that how most of we coaches get started? Is we take a pattern somewhere we like and we run it, is what we do. And but I couldn't do that because I didn't have one. And so I spent a great deal of time, my first couple of years out coaching, and any time I could find a basketball clinic to go to, I went to it. And a lot of the offense we ran was my own offense. And I'm not, I don't mean to sound stupid about that, but I just didn't, I didn't have a pad offense to run. Now, I know lots of guys that get into the business, and if they played at Oregon State and came down to Oregon City High School and you played them, they were running the same stuff Oregon State ran last year. Now, that's what they'd learned how to run. Now, they could change that. But anyhow, so that's what happened all the way along down at the very beginning, is it just took some time, and what I had to do is I had to try and find ways to get the ball to people that could do something with it. And so did a lot of that, and did change a lot of offense. A couple times had coaches turn to me and after a ball game somewhere, and some of them say, it's a craps playing you guys. Nobody else runs the same stuff you do. And, you know, all I could say was, well, I wasn't smart enough. I didn't have an offense when I got here. And I had to find ways to do things and ways to get the ball to people and so on and so forth.
Yeah, and I'm curious, Coach, you know, you're one of the few people I've had a chance to interview where, you know, you coached before the three-point line was instituted and after. And I'm just kind of curious, you know, how did your coaching change when the three-point line came to the game?
Well, it was, you know, to start with your own kids, before the three-point line was in, you wanted your kids to take good shots. I remember had a player at Hillsboro who was a pretty good player, pretty good athlete. He was our quarterback in football and stuff, and it hit me about five games into the season. I hadn't seen him. That was my first year at Hillsboro, and I didn't get a chance to see their kids in the summertime, so I didn't know much about them. And I got there, and he could get a shot up. He just didn't shoot very well. And after a while, about a month into the season, all of a sudden he came, and I should have gone to him probably before that. He came up to me and said, Coach, my playing time's getting less and less. And I said, well, Mark, you're not getting that ball down. You know, and I ripped my package open. I said, you're shooting 28% from the field right now. We can't afford that. You know, and so, well, if I can't this, that, and yeah. And hey, he was a good athlete and having a good athletic career at Hill High. Went on to play ball at Portland State and football. But once again, he'd fire the three, even though there wasn't a three-point line there. And he was shooting 28% or something like that from the field. And so I played him less and less until finally he quit. And I felt badly about him quitting because the kid was an athlete. And he was a good kid. Not that it wasn't, and I knew his dad somewhat. But it was just one of those things that, you can't do it. And so when the three-point line came in, once again, it fit me okay. Because once again, I could tell, that's where we started with kids, is you're going to have to prove to us now. And matter of fact, we started keeping numbers. We had a uncle. He kept 3-point stat shots in practice every night. And at the end of the night, kids could go over and say, oh, I was 3 for 7 or whatever. Yeah. And tried to make a big deal out of it to them that we want you to shoot the ball with good shots for you. But we need, we need you to be a 45-46% shooter from 17 feet. And, if you can't shoot that well, then we don't want you shooting there.
Yeah, one of the things I think, too, Coach, you talked about a little bit of offense and shot selection. I mean, how do you teach kind of that proper decision-making?
The what now?
What? So how do you teach kind of the decision making within your offense. So how do you teach a good shot from a bad shot? How do you teach?
Right, first of all, your numbers will teach you that, but you have to have numbers to use it. In other words, you know, at least I felt the final side with Mark at this point was, Mark, you're shooting 28 from the field right now. I'm either going to play you and tell you not to shoot or not play you. Mm-hmm. You know, and your defense isn't good enough to just figure we are our best defender, so we're going to play you anyway, and so on. But that's one of the statistics. One of the things that you teach kids with is that, you know, if you were 4 for 7 in that ball game, nice job. Mm-hmm. Now if you're 2 for 9, can't have many of those. And, you know, and you might feel like, well, aren't you putting a little heat on the kids? Well, yes and no, because you put the heat on them to start with you gotta do things well that you're gonna do. And, you know, again, it's the same thing. It's like running a triangle. If you got a post kid down inside that really does a nice job of getting the ball and does a nice job of finishing, here we go. Now, if you don't have, we don't go there nearly as often. And so what you tell kids is pretty simple. Hey, you know, you're doing a pretty good job getting the ball down inside, but you're not taking that next step. You're standing flat-footed and trying to spin around and shoot a tough jumper, you know, something like that, and you're not getting a lot out of it. And we need you to get more. And here's how, you know, let's go over and work on it again. You know, take a look at it. And so here, once again, your numbers are what tell you that. And kids should be able to understand the numbers. You know, mm-hmm. if, again, like I say, we – at South Salem, we shot 5-11 from the field, and Glencoe shot 5-10. Won state championships both times with them, and one of the biggest reasons was we shot the ball well. And we shot it, you know, and we did a nice job of getting the shots we wanted. And we did a nice job getting the kids we wanted, getting the good shots.
Yeah, how do you approach that subject with a team? So, you know, let's say you've got your better kid, your Thalo Greens, your Mike McShane's. You know, I think the kids know that those are the kids maybe you want having that shot. But, you know, how do you get a kid to be okay with, hey, coach, I'm wide open. You know, I want to take this shot, but that's not the shot you want to take.
Yeah, and one of the reasons you might be wide open is because you don't shoot it very well. You know, and certainly, I don't know how scouting is now and how what kind of a job people do. Back in our day and age, people did a pretty good job on you. And matter of fact, we used to, they found out how to tick us off would be come watch us play a ball game, bring your four coaches with you and sit two rows behind our bench. And come up and sit down back up there and just, you know, and you say, you can't sit behind our bench. Yeah, we can. Okay, I guess you can. But once again, you know, kids need to understand that part of it. It's not a matter of saying, I've got an open shot, I get to shoot. I mean, you're open when you're at 51 feet just shortly before you cross midcourt. You're oftentimes open. So is that a good shot? I don't think so. Matter of fact, here's one of the things I'm kind of waiting to see. I don't know whether they'll do it or not, but I've asked a lot of people, should they put in a four-point line? Mm-hmm. When I see Damian Lillard hitting those 30-foot, 32-foot shots and stuff, I'm not so sure there's not place for a four-point line now, too.
Mm-hmm.
And, hey, it's worth four. It's a little tough. You don't shoot quite as well from there as you do from 26 and so on and so. Anyhow, I think that has an awful lot to do with it. It's the same thing. Do you want your big kid who doesn't dribble very well dribbling up the floor against the press? Well, you'd say, well, no.
Probably not.
Probably not. Well, it's the same thing. And you don't want, if a kid's not a good shooter in certain situations, don't want him shooting those. Now, can he work on that shot? Yes, he can. Will you help him after practice? You bet. And if you begin to see some changes, then maybe you begin to change a little something around with them. That's fine. You know, it's a matter of, what you want to do. If you let me post up that guy and take that ball inside on triangle 20 times a ball game, I'm going to beat you pretty damn regularly. Mm-hmm. It's just no way I'm not going to. You know, and although our defense may not be great either, you know, and at that point I'd lose a few more that way if the defense doesn't play well. But you got to do the job on both ends of the floor.
Yeah, you talked about, you know, you had some pretty darn successful shooting teams. Why do you think that is? Is it how you teach shooting? Is it the practice that you do? What led to that?
Yeah, we spent extra time on it. For instance, at South Salem. Now, I couldn't run a shooting camp for our kids in the spring. But I could for the girls in the spring, because I was coaching the boys. So both the South boys and the South girls both signed up for a shooting camp, and I took the girls, and whoever had the girls took the boys. And we'd come in often, and we'd go maybe 4 hours, 5 hours on a Saturday, and we'd have maybe 30 boys and 20 girls there. Well, and just you do some little things like that. You found something in the fall that your kids could do. If they had anything going on down in the hoop in Salem, then you got them into it if you could. You know, you encourage them to get into it and go places and do things. And so, once again, if your kids work a little harder than others do, they may be a little better. They won't be a lot better, but they may be a little better. We always worked fairly hard at trying to make sure our kids, I mean, if we had open gyms, boy, we were very encouraging to get them there. You know, and again, they would let us have open gyms. We couldn't coach in them, but we had kids that ran it, and they fairly well understood what needed to happen and what didn't need to happen.
Coach, before we take a break, I kind of want to ask you about, you know, you've seen kind of the transition used to be when you coached basketball. You know, you had probably close to a month to practice to prepare for your first game. And it seems like we're getting less and less time to prepare for games, especially going into this coming season where we're going to have, you know, the shortest amount of time that we've ever had to prepare. So my question is, what advice would you give to coaches on that limited time? What are the things that you think are the most important to put in that preseason time before game one?
Yeah. Well, that's interesting, and I think that would depend a little bit on the kids you have in a given time. But I think also it depends a little bit on what you're doing. And, you know, you can it's the same for both you and the opponents you're playing. If everybody in your division classification all play the same number of games in the same time, it's the same for all of them anyway. In other words, they have less time to get stuff in too. Now, I would think, you know, along that and along those kind of lines, your first concern would be getting the really important stuff. Now, for instance, would we spend some time on triangle? You bet. Now, if we didn't have a particularly good post kid that year, we may not spend much time that year on it if we weren't going to go to him. And so what you tried to do is make sure, and anyway, I think part of it, part of what I would really push is what we need to take pride in, what we need to do. I mean, there's nothing wrong with turning to your ball club at a given point and saying, you know, gentlemen, we can get to that doggone state tournament if we can defend a little better. We really need some help out of you guys. And I think you start with things that way, and you tell them what's really important, and you just figure, well, matter of fact, you may decide, well, we'd like to work again. We'd like to work some more on our running game, but I'm going to put that off until the 20th, maybe the 1st of December, before we're really going to start spending some time. Let me get the more important stuff in first that we have to have to play those early ball games with, and then add those other things as you get there. If they've robbed you of some time before the season starts, then I'd cut back a little bit on what exactly we get done. Now, here again, though, it may depend on your league situation. you know, you may not have any non-league ball games, or you may have nothing but non-league ball games in December. Well, that's one thing. If you're playing four league ball games in December, then once again, you got to do things a little differently, because it's in league play we have to perform. You know, and so I'd certainly take care of that first. Take care of the enemy, the other people, secondly.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, Coach, we're going to take a quick break. We'll return with more from Coach Adams right after this on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast.
The start of school means it's time to sign up or renew your Oregon Basketball Coaches Association membership. OBCA membership includes access to exclusive resources that help personalize instruction, understand players' mindsets, and maximize the impact of your practices. Members also receive access to the OBCA mentoring program and have a voice in improving the game at the state level. Membership starts at just $15 a year. Register online today at or.nhsbca.org.
Welcome back to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Derek Duman here with Coach Barry Adams. Coach, I'm going to shift gears a little bit here as we go into segment two. And want to start by asking you about Cascade Sports Camp, Cascade Basketball Camp specifically. You are one of the founders of that camp, which has become very successful. Can you talk a little bit about the origin of Cascade Basketball Camp, how it started, and how it ended up being what it is today?
Sure. Sure. Hey, it was something I just thoroughly enjoyed and loved and took an awful lot of time with. We were open 40 years. We opened the first year when I was coaching in Lebanon. We ran it down in Lebanon. It was Sadie M Sports Camp then. We spent a year there and had about three camps, maybe 30 to 40 kids each. The only other sports camp in the state at that time was Perry's, run by Ted Wilson out of Linfield, and who did a nice job, and it was a good camp, and they must have gone 6 or 7 weeks maybe, and so on. And so they were around, and that was the only other camp around, and it kind of hit me. I'm down in Lebanon, and if I'm a kid from Medford or Eugene or Bend, Perry's is a long ways away. And Ted Wilson did a nice job. He was a good man on the camp trail, good, successful Linfield coach, and so on and so forth. We opened the thing in the summer of 69. We ran 3 weeks. We went one summer there and couldn't get together. They had snow up there still when we started camp, and there were bugs around and stuff, and we just figured, well, we can't put up with that. So the second 2 years, the first year we were in Lebanon, the second 2 years we were up on top of the Sandy Am Pass. We're talking 5,000 feet up in snow country. But there was a church lodge there in an area we put courts in and ran maybe 4 or 5 weeks of camps and probably averaged 40 kids a week. But again, the bugs got to us, and so we had a gentleman that had a piece of property up in the hills west of, or east of Salem, up around Mill City and that area. So we got together with a guy and he built it, and we leased it and bought it from him both at the same time. And we ran it for 40 years there. We had about almost 59,000 campers down through the years, both boys and girls. We had about 4,800 coaches that attended and worked it, and so on and so forth. The average week we had 112 kids, 16 coaches, eight counselors. And let's see, we had some weekend camps, shooting camps, post camps, et cetera, et cetera. It really went well for us. It was amazing some of the things you could see in it. and we're just able to accomplish. We were in all-star weeks there every week for probably 30 of the 40 weeks we ran it. We had a lot of the better kids in Oregon there came. In fact, we started the all-star process that took kids down to Las Vegas and so on. So, as a matter of fact, I'm up there. We're working an all-star week, and one of Nick Robertson's kids is at camp. And so he comes up to watch, and we get talking, and he mentions the fact that Charlie Sitton had gone the summer before with a young team out of Washington down to Reno, or down to Las Vegas and down to California. And so we got talking and decided, well, hey, maybe we can put something together. Let's talk to some of the better kids here. And we started that process, and down that went. And it had, kids. It was an all-day work job. We were on the courts at 8:30. You were done at 12:30. We had lunch. You're back on the courts at 1:30. We had ball games in the afternoon after that, and done to that, and ate dinner at 5:30, and back on the courts at 6:30 or 6:45, and had some contests and things like that. And kids really seemed to enjoy it, and not all of them, not all the time. But generally speaking, you met a lot of kids from a lot of different places. And we had all-star, had the all-star camps and stuff there. And so, we had a heck of a bunch of the kids, most of the decent kids from about 77 up through about 1998, something like that, we had. Most often a typical week, you'd take maybe a first and second team, all state teams from the year before, and typically all but maybe one or two of those kids would all be at camp. And so we got to see a lot of them. We had, I know you're getting into it, I guess, but Mark Few, the coach of Gonzaga, was a camper there. A whole bunch of them. Matter of fact, I see Eric Spoelstra just lost their final ball game. Eric was an ex-camper, and so on and so forth, down in Miami now. Danny Ainge, maybe the best athlete ever to come out of Oregon. I don't know whether you remember him or not. Lots of people don't. He's been gone a while. He played at North Eugene, and he played for the Boston Celtics for maybe 5 or 6 years. And at the same time, played for the Toronto Blue Jays in the baseball. And he played there for 4 years, I think. Played both of them at the same time. And so we had, a bunch of guys like that operated and came in. And just it worked out well. We hit the thing at the right time with a lot of people. Like I say, had 4,800 coaches come in, and we had a number of them. We had half a dozen, maybe 8 or 9 NBA coaches that worked at one time or another there, and oftentimes as younger ones, although not always, and so on. So that was kind of what that was all about.
Yeah, I know, Coach. I work it now, and there's plenty of coaches across the state that are still working it. And I think, we all talk about one of the cool parts about being a high school coach to go work is the ability to kind of network and just talk hoops with other high school coaches. Was that intentional on your guys' part, or was primary focus? We just want players to come together.
Absolutely. Always felt very strongly about Oregon basketball and what it provided, and wanted to see it go well, and this was all part of that. We just wanted kids to have the best opportunity they could get, and I certainly never mind. I mean, I'd be out there watching a ball game being played, and here'd come this really good kid from West Albany down, and he'd fire that three, and that thing would go in, and I'd think, darn it, he's going to do that to us next year. You had to watch him. you know, do it. But it was, it gave you also that great feeling about things going on and about what was happening. And it was a nice place. Kids just got along well. I think in 40 summers, we threw one coach out and three campers. And we're talking almost 59,000 kids that came through. And four of them didn't make it. They did something bad enough to where we just had to turn to them and say, call it home. You're getting out of here. And so on and so forth. And so, I mean, we welcomed kids and enjoyed having them. The other weekend, a couple weekends ago, went over with my wife to pick up some pizza for dinner, and guy's in there when she comes in, and he's seen us drive in, and he says, "Excuse me, is that Coach Adams?" And she says, "Yeah." So he comes out, and he says, "Coach Adams," you know, he yells at me and waves and stuff, and so I slow him down a little bit, talk to him, and he said, "Coach," he says, "went to camp for a whole bunch of summers." And I said, "Oh, you know," I thought he looks a little bit familiar. Mm-hmm. And I said, "You went to high school at Wilson, didn't you?" He says, "Yeah, you remember." I said, "Well, I do remember we had a kid for 8 summers, I think, at age 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, something like that. 8 straight summers he went to camp. And I remembered we had a kid that kind of looked like that. And a whole bunch of them could have come out of that place, held on to their pizza, and I couldn't have come close to guessing where they were from. But I just happened to hit him with it, and he said, "Yep, that's me. That was me, all right." And so.
Yeah, very cool. Coach, obviously, you know, having started Cascade Sports Camp, coached all over the state of Oregon, you know, you've had a huge impact on players and coaches alike. Who were some of the people that had an impact on you in your coaching career?
Well, that's a good question. I think certainly as I look at them, there were a number of people that we had in camp that we had a kind of a continuous break. We all the coaches stayed in the coaches' dorm. And we had chalkboards in there and so on and so forth. And we had things some evenings. We had special things. In fact, one of the things we'd put up, we had a chalkboard over on one side. And if you wanted to hear one of the coaches there talk about something on Tuesday night, we were going to have a coaches' night. And so they might say Barry Adams triangle. And they might say Nick Robertson, da-da-da-da, and the coaches that are there. So-and-so from Brookings, the running game, and so on. And so we always had those kinds of things going on, and we were always concerned with it, with how, and you know, and coaches had their great, they had good senses of humor. I mean, it was a nice place to get together, and I think I had a lot of coaches say, you know, I coached against this guy for a couple of years and didn't like him very well and got him up here at camp and really enjoy him. And it just got him in a different circumstance and a situation which the camp business could create that for you. And, you know, certainly those coaches might go down the hill after a beer one of the nights, and that was fine. You know, the other coaches were staying up trading secrets anyhow on what was going on and a better way to beat one of those guys. But anyhow, and so I think it really helped Oregon and Southwest Washington and so on and so forth, and we just put a lot of things together, you know, and you met people, you found out they were good folks. I think we helped a lot in the collegiality that existed. I mean, it's surprising, all those coaches in all those years, and it's not like you had to pull them apart once in a while. We didn't. They handled themselves really well. And I think that sense of it part of gave it also gave us a reaction to Oregon and Washington and so on and so forth, in which, hey, it's a good place to deal with people and a good place for them to find that out.
Yeah. When you go watch high school games now, what is it you think coaches could be emphasizing or developing in their players a little more?
Oh, I don't know. You know, they tell me that programs underneath aren't as effective as they were. I don't know whether that's true or not. I'm not sure what one needs to take a look at that way. You know, I'm just not sure. Teams don't seem to be quite as competitive. Maybe that's just me. Watch it. But, well, I'm not sure I can answer that.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, I think, you know, the game's a little different. I agree. I think the kid is different, the player.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That competitiveness is different.
That stuff is all quite different. No question about that. And I think that has to do with kids and schools now and the way they deal with things. Matter of fact, with this whole pandemic we have going on around us, who knows what the other effects are going to be
right
before this thing's all over. It's created a pretty good mess for a lot of things, and certainly one of them may be high school athletics. I know the OSAA and the Washington School Activities Association stuff, they're all struggling trying to figure out what to do, and that's not necessarily good for everything.
Yeah, very true. What are some things overall maybe that you think could be changed to help improve the game of basketball?
Well, I think right now the first thing they got to do is they got to get a lid on this whole pandemic, I think. What's got to be awfully tough for you guys right now, and you asked the question here a little bit ago about, well, what do you need to do? You know, you have some suggestions about things. What should people be working at? We're getting less time to prepare and da 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 da. Those same questions. Those things always take an impact. They have an impact on you. And I know in talking to some coaches, they struggle a bit in their own schools and their own programs. And all it takes on some place is just one parent to come in and say, I don't like the way he does this or that, and they almost fire you over it. At least I've heard that from people.
Coach, when you look back on your career, what are you most proud of?
Well, I think helped provide a lot for the game of basketball in Oregon, and I feel good about how we did things. I mean, did win close to 70% of all my games, but did it the same old way anybody else got to do it, and that is you just had to work hard and try and make it happen as best you could. So in some years you were better than you were other years. Some weeks you were better than you were other weeks. And just over a period of time, I mean, I've thoroughly enjoyed the whole process. I've always felt rather proud of high school basketball in this state. And, you know, just I think just generally about the whole thing. I think it went well. Schools did a good job with it. Parents did a good job with it. We had fun.
That's awesome. Thanks, Coach. We're going to take another break. And when we return, Coach Adams will try to beat the shot clock here on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast.
Join us for the 13th annual Nike, OACA, and OBCA Basketball Coaching Clinic, December 4th and 5th at the Sheraton Airport Hotel. Strict COVID protocols and restrictions will be in place. Register today at www.oregoncoach.org.
Welcome back to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. We're talking with Coach Barry Adams. Do you think Oregon high school basketball should have a shot clock?
I really don't care. I'd like to coach with it or without it. Either one fits. I don't know that it makes the game into a better game, although everything you see now, you know, the pros, they're into, they fire shots so quick, you can't even, I'm not sure there's a thing called a pass anymore. They come down and dribble around and fire that thing up, and they do a nice job of it. It's hard to look at it and say they ought to do something else. In fact, oftentimes they don't take it inside much, and which is fine. I like taking it inside because it helps you win. It's not that I like taking it inside because I like it taking it inside, so on. But anyhow, I think that's part of it with them. Okay.
Yeah. If you're up 3 points with less than 10 seconds on the clock, do you foul?
Do you foul? Up three?
Up three, less than 10 seconds. Do you foul?
On a three-point shot?
Just in general. So just would you general. Rather them go to the line to shoot two free throws or risk them hitting a three to send it into overtime?
Well, it probably depends on who's shooting it and what kind of a team they are. If they don't have anybody who shoots a three fairly well, let them shoot the ball. Again, you'd play your numbers on that. I mean, if I think they've got two really good three-point shooters and this is one of them, I'd be careful. I'd try to check the shot first, you know, rather than foul him unless, you know, because, again, if he's a good three-point shooter, he's probably a pretty good free-throw shooter too. And so you'd have to put that into context and depend on who it is and what it is. And once again, I don't know that your kids can make that change that late in a situation or not. You know, here it is to win the ball game, and you get to, and you don't get to yell because they're down the other end; they're down on their end,
right.
And so you're a distance from them.
How big of a lead do you need before you pull off a press?
Before you pull off a press?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it depends on possessions in a ball game. Here again. If you're looking at it and you think we're going to be 65 possession game, then it's a 65 possession game. If it's an 85 possession game, if you're playing West Albany, Dean Roberts is coaching there, and you've got to score 112 to win. Then you're going to need to get maybe a lot of quick shots up. And so I think it depends a little bit on the kind of team you're playing, and maybe also in terms of what's going on that night. What appears to be the best things that night. Now, here again, can you tell kids on the court in the middle of things? Well, yeah, maybe you can. If you can communicate it with them and they understand it, then fine. You decide what's best for you, and then whether it's taking away the shot or backing off and giving it to them or whatever the case might be, then do it.
What was your favorite way to guard on-ball screens?
Well, favorite way was to jump the thing, double it, and play something else somewhere else. But if you're playing a team that offensively does a nice job with things like that, then I think, again, you're going to have to be a little bit different. And that's where coaching kids, not only coaching kids, but telling kids, you know, if we're going to double that, they're going to set a pick and come off it, and we can jump it and double it. It depends on what they have, what they typically deal with things well. If they do a nice job on a screen and roll and people and so on and so forth, then you better be careful with them because they probably spend some time on it. If it's just somebody running something, that's another thing. So, again, I don't know that that's a great answer, but it would depend a little bit on their kids and your kids and what kind of game you're playing.
I'm going to switch it up on you here, Coach. Did you have a favorite pregame meal? What was your favorite thing to eat before a game?
Oh, probably a hamburger and fries. That sounds terrible. No, it sounds good.
Yeah, it does sound good. How did you guys celebrate after a big win?
After a big win? Well, we at times we went somewhere with the kids. Times we had things inside, depending on how big something was. If it was big enough, we might well have had, you know, we might have had some parents bring some Coke in, something like that, and we could go somewhere. And in Salem, you could do that because there were some pretty good places right there to go down to something after a ball game and we did that from time to time. But generally speaking, they came in and cheered, came in and laughed and giggled a bit and made a lot of nice noises about good things that people did that night. And probably had to remind them about tomorrow. Because we did a nice job. That was great. That's a perfect win. But we got a tough one tomorrow.
How did you go about selecting team captains?
Team captain. That depends a little bit on the team you had. I think this is always important. If you had a good captain or two, a couple of leaders that were just, they were serious about the game, then you didn't have to worry about it. You didn't even have to vote on it, possibly. But if you voted on it, oftentimes we'd say, well, the coaches get a vote, too. And, matter of fact, we get a two-point vote because we understand it a little better than you guys do, but we want you to get the vote, too, figure out who's who. So I think you could do that with different people, but I think you had to be careful with it. And the kids to say something. And so I know some years I wasn't sure exactly where we were, and so we sat down and talked about captains and about what they meant, and then asked the kids, well, who would you suggest out of the bunch sitting here and why? And again, you put some of that heat on them. And oftentimes kids in a situation like that would be pretty realistic in front of everybody. But I think there were times you had some good kids. You had a good kid or two that would take good care of it. And I mean, it was typically Mike McShane. I mean, he could be a captain of anything on the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Just a great kid and didn't mind. I mean, he was a kid that would say something. You know, you'd hear him tell a kid, hey, you can't do something like that. You know, he'd coach him and so on. And so he was a kid just naturally. However, now, and we could vote with a situation like that. And if they didn't pick him, then I'd say, well, with the vote plus our coach's vote, we've got three co-captains. And Mike's one of them. You wouldn't say Mike's one of them to them, but it was.
Right. Did you have a favorite team-building activity?
Man, I don't think so. Not that I can think of. Had some things you did from time to time, and sometimes they seemed to work okay. Sometimes didn't. Yeah, I don't know that I had a favorite one.
Not a favorite. What were some of the things you guys did?
Well, we might run some sort of a drill. And we'd let the kids decide, okay, we will break you into four groups of three. On three of you, what we want one of you, or two of you, or three of you, to take over the situation and figure out what you're going to run against us, against each other. And we'll just come down the floor each time, three on three, and then attack. And so we did things like that, and we often have, then you'd turn around and say, they'd finish their play, and you'd say, well, who came up with that? You know, and they, oh, well, it was John's play, and so on and so forth. And so we did things like that from time to time because we wanted to find out a little bit about who would do what. And then you also wanted a response from the other kids because you found out pretty quickly that if the kids they didn't have anybody they wanted to put their faith in, but they had to put it in somebody. So they said, well, yeah, Rick, what do you want to do? Okay, we'll do it that way and come back and let them do it. You wanted to find out where the kids were, kind of in terms of relationships and so on and so on. And by the way, when you built the three-man teams in, you build them in with that in mind. Let's make sure we spread the leaders out and keep the other ones in, and so on.
Did you have a favorite drill that you would run maybe every day or every other day that you thought was really important?
Yeah, that we did. We did something running every day, something to do with a running game every day. No, I'm not sure we did that. We did it at times. I guess we didn't do it all the time, come to think of it. But I can't think of anything in particular that, you know, what that was is you kept points is what you kept. And the groups came down the floor, three on three, let's say full court, flying down the floor. And whoever had the ball, whichever guy they wanted to start with the ball, they could start with them, and they came. And we'd run 10 possessions. And then we'd figure out, okay, you guys won over there. You scored on 7 of the 10. Okay, and here's this, and here's this. And you'd sometimes would turn around and even say, okay, now you took the ball inside every time. And they'd look at you and say, yeah, we decided to. Okay, just wanted to know, who decided it? Well, we all did. Oh, okay, that's fine. You did a nice job of it, and so on and so forth. And some might come down and decide they're gonna set a pick on the three, and they're gonna shoot. They've got two good 3-point shooters, and they got a screener, so they're gonna bring it up the floor, and the screener's gonna go set a pick for a 3-point shot. And here again, the only important thing was, well, yeah, we scored on two out of the three possessions. Okay, right. Good basketball.
Right.
I think again, one of the things do with, and I don't remember where I picked that up, but one of the things you tried to do is you tried to give kids an idea about what's smart, what works, what doesn't work, what slows down, what happens to things, why do you get in trouble, why doesn't something work. You wanted kids to be part of the process. Understand, again, it's like I say, you can sit down with your kids and say, well, you know, Mark Neffendorf, you're shooting 28% from the field. We can't have you shooting the ball. I've waited about a week or two longer than I should have, you know, but I kept thinking, well, because they told me you led the JVs in scoring last year. And he said, well, I did. Well, I eventually got some JV stats, and he was 31% for the year shooting the ball. But he was their leading scorer. You know.
All right, Coach. Well, I am out of questions for you. At least our time is helping me say I'm out of questions. I just want to say thank you so much for spending time with us today. We really appreciate it.
Oh, it's fun. Really enjoyed it. Glad to see you doing things like this. Anything that helps the game of basketball or high school sports generally out is well worthwhile, because it does a great deal for our kids, and they learn a lot, they gain a lot, they learn how to compete, they learn how to be better people, better teammates. They just always love the years in it, and it's well worth the time.
If you have any follow-up questions or want to get a hold of Coach Adams, you can find his contact information in the episode description. We hope you join us next time here on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Until then, coach him up.
Thank you for listening to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Is there a coach you'd like to hear from or a topic you'd like to hear us discuss? You can write us a message on the Anchor website or send us an email at OregonBasketballCoaches@gmail.com. You can also subscribe to this podcast on Spotify.